Happy holidays, everybody. As we wrap up 2025, we're going to put out a few episodes with the founder of The Perfect Workout, Matt Hedman. This goes into the inspiration of what started The Perfect Workout and some of his personal testimony. Please enjoy. Welcome to The Perfect Workout Podcast, where fitness meets simplicity. I'm Kyle Recchia, CEO of The Perfect Workout. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
I've been with The Perfect Workout for a number of years, almost 7 years now. And I feel like every time I've had a chance to sit down and talk with you, Matt, there's always some sort of fascinating story I learn about you or your experience with slow motion strength training and especially your beginnings with it. So I'm really curious, how did you first hear about the method? How did you hear about slow motion strength training, and who or what inspired you to get into it?
So I'm 48 years old right now at the time of this recording, and for better or for worse. And I actually got into lifting weights when I was 10 years old. So I guess if I'm doing my math right, that's 38 years that I've been at this. So this was somewhere between my fourth and fifth grade year, and bought my own weightlifting set. And I guess I must have been a crazy kid, because I now have a 9-year-old son. And so I was 1 year older than him, and it just doesn't seem normal, you know, for a child that age to get a weight set. But I did. I was inspired to do that for whatever reason back then. And anyway, at that age, I really got into exercise all in. Like, I've been in a fitness nut, I guess you could say, ever since. And so between age 10 and 20, I didn't really have a good way of going about things. In hindsight's always 20/20, but I was just kind of haphazardly doing, you know, whatever was the latest book that I read, or you know, about exercise or strength training or nutrition. And by the time I got to age 20, I was lifting weights for 2 hours a day, 6 days a week. And so that's 12 hours of the lifting weights and exercising per week. And by that point, I was in college at this point, and I'd actually developed some relatively, some chronic pain in my left shoulder. It was bad enough to where I went and saw a shoulder specialist, and she was fortunately able to figure out what it was. And they took an X-ray, and where the end of the bone should have been nice and round and smooth, it was all jagged, and it was actually being eaten away. There was so much inflammation in the shoulder, it was actually eating away the end of the bone, something called osteolysis, which means vanishing bone. And the joint specialist, she said, that this happens in about 1% of people that lift weights, although I think I've only met one other person in my life that's had this condition. She said, well, I want you to take 2 months off of any weight training exercise which involve the shoulder. And then we'll come back in an X-ray again and see how it is. So I did. And I still did some exercise for my legs and even some for my arms, just as long as they didn't involve my shoulder directly. And so I came back in after the 2 months, and they took another X-ray. And fortunately, the end of the bone in question was now all nice and round and smooth again. It had healed, which is good news, because sometimes it doesn't heal from rest. And I avoided surgery. And so then she essentially said, okay, you can go back and lift weights again. And she had some minor changes as far as what to do. It was to do, you know, incline bench presses instead of flat bench presses, and some other kind of what I would consider in hindsight minor changes. So I went in and did those changes and started, you know, throwing the weights around in the gym again. And my shoulder just started to hurt again, which was, you know, disturbing and frustrating. And it's not like, you know, I was 20 years old, you know, presumably, you know, someone who'd be young and healthy and, you know, have the best opportunity to not have joints that would hurt, you know?
Yeah.
So it was right around that time when I was you know, starting to get back into, or starting to do exercises that involved the shoulder again, and it started to hurt again, where I stumbled upon a book in one of the bookstores in the university district up in Seattle at the University of Washington, where I was going to college at the time. It was a book by Ellington Darden, who used to be the director of research at Nautilus, the company that makes strength training machines. And he's written about 50 books, I think, at this point, on strength training, nutrition, fitness, and exercise. And anyway, this particular one was geared towards young males who wanted to build bigger muscles. And I was a 20-year-old male, you know, trying to build bigger muscles as best I could. And one of the chapters, you spend a significant amount of time talking about how slower movement speeds minimize impact forces on your joints and make it safer on your joints. And so that kind of, you know, perked up my eyebrows a little bit. And I mean, in hindsight, it's obvious, but it wasn't obvious to me at that point.
Sure.
But the routines in this book sounded bizarre to me, because at the time I was loosely following the exercise guidelines and Arnold Schwarzenegger's Encyclopedia of Modern Bodybuilding. And so I was doing five sets of repetitions of, five sets of 10 repetitions or so of each exercise, working out 2 hours a day, 6 days a week. And in some cases, working out in the morning and in the evening. And
like a part-time job.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was in college. I didn't know how much exercise that was. Right. Like now with being 48 and two young children and trying to, you know, grow a company and all that kind of stuff, it's like, who would ever have time for that? But at the time I had time for it. But this routine that Darden had in his book was that routine. It was working out every other day. It was about a half an hour per workout, just one set of repetitions per exercise, going very slowly, 10 seconds up, 5 seconds down in that particular protocol. Would this ever work? But fortunately, there was a case study in that book that they featured, Keith Whitley, who over the 6 week program, he was already a big bodybuilder to start out with. And over the 6 week program, he gained, I think it was 32 pounds of muscle in 42 days or something like that. And that combined with the fact that I was having this, you know, kind of pretty big shoulder problem, it might be better for my shoulder. That, well, why not give it a try? And so I was, and I'm glad that I did, because
we are too.
for me personally, I actually haven't trained a client myself who's done as well as far as muscle gain, at least. With the initial results that I had, but I put on 10 pounds of muscle in the first 9 days. Once I learned how to make my muscles work harder, I didn't know what, you know, I thought I was working hard before when I was working out 2 hours a day, 6 days a week. It turns out I just didn't know what hard work was. So I put on 10 pounds of muscle in 9 days. And then also my shoulder problem went away within about the first week or so. And then essentially not to be heard from again, you know, ever since. And so I've been a raving fan of this method ever since. And so that's how my, I've been personally doing this and variations of this in my own workouts for the last 28 years, I guess it is. And I was studying engineering at the time and, graduated, went to work for GE as an engineer and saw my life flashing before my eyes on the second floor of Building J on the GE complex. And it wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. And so I quit after 11 months there at GE and started working at the company, which is now 24 Hour Fitness, and worked for them and another company for a total of 3 years before starting the Perfect Workout back in May of 1999. And so that's when our company started. And
so what happened between you leaving your engineering job and starting the Perfect Workout? There must have been a lot of learning, a lot of training, a lot of probably paradigm shifts still in terms of exercise. So what did that transition look like?
So my degree was actually in aerospace engineering from the University of Washington. And I was actually working for GE Nuclear Energy in San Jose. Was my, you know, kind of engineering, it was my engineering job that I got out of college. And so, as I mentioned, during my first 11 months, I just realized, oh, this is just not my passion. It's not what I want to do with my life. And so I started putting out feelers to different gyms as far as what it would take to become a personal trainer. During that process, what is now 24 Hour Fitness at the time in the Bay Area, it was 24 Hour Nautilus, it was the company. They actually gave me a job offer to come on, even though I didn't have any formal education in exercise or any formal experience in exercise. I always say they must have recognized the strength of my engineering personality. That's what that must have carried the interview there. And And so, yeah, I got hired on without any formal credentials at that point. But having said that, when I did, then I started acquiring different certifications in kind of relatively short order. So I got several certifications from, you know, what are sort of mainstream fitness organizations like ACE, the American Council on Exercise, and also NASM, NASM, the, what is that, National Academy of Sports Medicine, are among those. And then, but also the in my mind, the really important ones were the certifications I got through the Super Slow Exercise Guild, which is not in existence anymore, that particular organization. Certainly the vast majority of the value that I got in my different certifications and education were through that world, including the certifications that I got. And so, and as far as changes in kind of how we, really since pretty much from, since I was already using super slow or slow motion, high intensity strength training in my own workouts at that point, when I was becoming a trainer, that's what I started working with my clients on right at 24 Fitness, you know, right out of the gate, and then just learn more and more and more about how to apply that to clients more effectively over time. So
you became certified, and you're what is it called? Is it a master super slow? What is it? Finish it.
Yes. Yeah. I was a master super slow instructor. I think that's what the term was. So back when the Super Slow Exercise Guild was in existence, which was, by the way, the Super Slow Exercise Guild was an organization which was formed by Ken Hutchins, and he ran for, I don't know, 10, probably a little over 10 years. And Ken Hutchins is the architect behind Super Slow Exercise philosophy and methodology. There was actually three different levels as far as certifications you could go through. So there was level one, and that was, let's put it, level one super slow certification was far more extensive than any of the other mainstream certifications that I've ever gone through. Compared to ACE or NASM, which really just took a multiple choice test, and if you scored 70%, you were certified. At least this was, you know, over 20 years ago at this point. So they may be different now, but at that point, that's what it was. You know, the super slow level one certification, you had to not only take, it was at least one written test, if not more, and then one or two verbal tests, and also go through an extensive practical examination showing that you were, you know, capable of teaching exercise. And so it's many aspects of that certification were really in the inspiration for what our initial certification program at our company became, actually.
Yeah. And attest to that, it is a lot of work, a lot of hard work, very hands-on, very practical.
So that was level one. And then so level two involved not only going and doing, you know, some more written testing and oral testing, but this was all with Ken Hutchins, which at the time he was in Florida. The gentleman who really put these different theories together, building on the work of Arthur Jones, and then, but really putting some further refinements to it. And so I spent, I think it was nine days in Florida, in the Orlando area, shadowing Ken for 14 hours a day, and then doing various tests, while the time that I was there. And so that got me to level two. And then beyond that, Ken has the option to appoint you as a master, or Ken had the option of appointing you to be a master instructor if you passed your level two. And so fortunately he did. I guess he felt that I was good enough to represent the guild at the time and to be able to certify other instructors to be level one instructors. So that was my journey in the super slow certifications.
Yeah. And then so you headed over to La Jolla in California and essentially started the first location of the Perfect Workout, right?
Yeah. So here's the, it's really the initial birthplace for the idea, at least in my mind, for what is now the Perfect Workout was back in, it was the end of 1996 and early 1997 when I was working as a trainer at 24 Fitness, the Bay Area. That's this first job of mine. And it was the Christmas holidays, and I was up in the Seattle area visiting friends, you know, that I'd known from college. And at the time, the only super slow place on the West Coast was up in Seattle. And I was teaching super slow as best I could in just a regular gym, 24 Fitness, with all the music and mirrors and people jumping up and down all around you and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, to me, that was all that I knew. And so I went up and said, well, if I'm in Seattle, why don't I schedule a time to work out? And that'd be fun and interesting, and potentially you could learn something. And so I did. And the day came where I was supposed to go in, and there was a huge snowstorm in Seattle. And Seattle's not a place that tends to get tons of snow. But you get a little bit of snow usually every year, but usually it's not too much. You know, you might get, you know, snow 2 or 3 inches one or two days, and that's it. Anyway, this was, I don't know, a foot of snow or something like that. And it had to go through. And so most businesses were closed. And so I called in to see if they're open, and they were saying, well, I don't know, we're trying to figure that out right now. And, you know, how long will it take for you to get here? And my friend actually had a 4-wheel drive Jeep Wrangler, and I asked him, and what, oh, it's 20 minutes or whatever. And so they said, come on down. And so I did. And Greg and Amory Anderson were the couple that owned that place. And so after chatting with them for a while, it came down to where I was going to need to work out. And so Greg wanted to put me through 4 exercises. It was the Smith machine squat, the old Nautilus hip and back machine, which was really a glute and hamstring exercise, weight assisted chin up, and then push up. And so when we were about ready to go on the squat machine, it had a lot less weight than I thought it should have compared to what I was normally using myself. And so I pointed that to Greg, and he said, oh, that's good, because I thought this is going to be too heavy for you. and I don't like weights that are too light, because then you're just, you know, burning for, you know, minutes on end. And so, but anyway, so we get under the machine and start doing slow repetitions. And sure enough, you know, it got extremely difficult at about 5 or 6 reps in. And the next rep or two, I got about halfway up and couldn't complete the repetition. You know, I was pushing as hard as I could. And I was, you know, there was no music going on. There was a blank white wall right in front of me. There was no distractions. And Greg was somewhere behind me. All I could hear was his voice saying, keep pushing. And, you know, coming from out of the ethers, you know, so to speak. And so I kept pushing, and then I got to the point where I couldn't even hold it up anymore. Even I was trying to make it go higher, but I got to the point where I couldn't even hold it still, and started forcing me down. And, Craig just said, keep pushing. So I kept pushing, and it forced me down all the way till the bar hit the safety stocks at the bottom. Oh. And he says, keep pushing. And so I kept pushing, and then my knees started vibrating together. And Greg just said, keep pushing.
Oh my gosh. And, sounds like torture.
Oh, it's tough. and then by the way, do not do this one. In fact, I don't even recommend doing this anymore. We just didn't know any better back then. Yeah. This is much harder than a person needs to train for optimal results. But the, so anyway, my knees were vibrating. Then my legs fatigued so much that they stopped vibrating, even though I was pushing as hard as I could. And then Greg just said, keep pushing.
Right.
And then finally, Greg said, okay, 15 more seconds. Push as hard as he can. So I pushed as hard as I could for 15 more seconds. and finally he said, okay, you can back off. And so I did. And it'll be hard to illustrate here for those that are listening, or even on the people that might watch this video. But anyway, on the Smith machine, it was sitting on the safety pegs. And so I pulled myself underneath the safety peg, and then using the bar there, so I tried to stand up. So both with my legs and my arms, I was trying to, like, you know, push and pull myself up. And I tried once, it couldn't stand up. You know, my leg, it's too fatigued. So I tried again harder. It couldn't stand up. Tried again. It wasn't able to stand up. And there was just nothing left. I was too momentarily fatigued. And so Greg said, don't even try to stand up, crawl the next machine. And so by this time I'm gasping for air after, like, you know, taking squats to that point of the point of exhaustion, which I just explained, and crawl the Nautilus hip and back machine. And he straps me in there and we go through that. And that was brutal in and of itself. And we did the weight assisted chin up, and then the push up. And you think he did an assisted rep at the end of that one too. And that was really tough. And so I was finally, after 4 exercises, it was done, but I was, you know, laying on the ground and my arms were just burning. And Greg, you know, brought me this tiny little, like, 2-ounce cup of water, and it was incredible. if I compare my experience doing that compared to what I was trying to do with myself and my clients back at 24 Fitness, I mean, it was night and day as far as the distraction-free environment and the incredible equipment, the low-friction equipment that you had access to, and the expert instruction, you know, that it was just amazing. And so that's when I really got, you know, hey, you know, I could make a place like this down in Southern, you know, down in California, and ultimately it turned out to be Southern California where we got started. But that was really that night. I was actually going skiing with friends the next day, but that night I was only able to sleep for about 2 hours because I was so excited about the idea of making an ideal exercise environment that myself and clients could work out in, yeah, here in California. And so that's where the initial idea got started. And then it was a process of still working at 24 hour. And then I actually went up to Ideal Exercise, worked for them for a year and a half before moving down to Southern California. Yeah. I had a short stint at 24 Fitness before I opened up the Perfect Workout down here. So
I've never heard that story before, and what a cool story. And I always thought that the distraction-free, you know, clinically controlled environment was just part of the protocol. And I know that it's, in some ways it is, but I never knew that you had such a personal experience in that. And that's what's created much of the environments here. For those who are watching the video, you know, that's one of our studios behind you. And sure enough, it's machines and a blank wall. And it really does make all the difference when you are pushing to get every last like inch of that repetition. And by the way, that sounded like torture, because trying to push for 3 or 5 seconds at muscle failure is challenging enough. Well, yeah, it's like 30.
Yeah. And I should mention, I briefly mentioned it while I was telling a story, but maybe just expand on it a little bit more. You see, I don't recommend push. Well, so if a person wants to fatigue as deep as I just described, more power to them. But in my experience on myself and working with other people, as long as you can fatigue down to what we call muscle success in our company, or some people call it muscle failure, fatigue down to where you're pushing or pulling on the exercise as hard as you can, and it won't move anymore, even though you're pushing as hard as you can, that's enough to stimulate optimal results from what I've seen. And if it was worth it to push beyond that, I would keep doing it, because I'm trying to, you know, even though I'm 40 years old, I'm still, you know, excited to do what I can to add more muscle on my body. But it just doesn't, you don't have to go as crazy as we did back then, because we just didn't know any better back then.
Yeah. So then it's May 1999. And that's officially when La Jolla opened up, right? The first location. Mm-hmm. And what I really love is that, you know, you started off like 95% of the people who work for the Perfect Workout as a personal trainer in this company.
Yep.
And I'm so curious if you have, whether it's from when you were training one-on-one with clients, or all the 20 years we've been in business, 20 plus years, do you have a favorite client success story?
Yes. So the one that I that always sticks out to me when people ask me that question is actually a client of John Durbin. I don't know, was John working for us whenever down in San Diego?
Doesn't sound familiar to me. Yeah. Maybe
he worked for us for about 5 years. Great guy, and John, actually, it's too bad you didn't meet him, because he's and maybe he will someday. He is the leanest as far as body fat percentage of any person I have ever met. And so he got out a DEXA scan here in San Diego, and he wasn't dieting or, you know, trying to get into bodybuilding shape or anything like that. He was just walking around like this. They measured him at 3% body fat, and they said, this is the lowest we've ever seen this machine weigh. So if you look at the skin, like his abs, there's less, but it's tighter on his abs than the skin on the back of your hand. I mean, it was just crazy. And that's John. And so John, when he tells his story about this client, Barbara Nuss, that he was working with, he said, you know, when I first became a personal trainer, I thought my, the thing which I was going to be most excited about was going to help someone gain a whole bunch of muscle or lose a bunch of fat or something like that. But it was actually this story of Barbara Ness, which I'm going to give my paraphrasing of the way I heard John tell the story. And so Barbara, and I might get some details wrong, but she was actually featured in our newsletter a number of years ago as well. And I think she was a cancer survivor. She might have also been, I know she was at least a grandmother, might have even been a great grandmother. And I think also had MS. She had multiple different conditions which were going on. And she was able to walk, but she needed to use a cane to walk. And I think she was training with us once a week. And if I remember correctly, and I'm not sure which day of the week it was like Friday or Saturday or whichever day. And John, used to say he could always hear when Barbara was coming in, cause he could hear the clacking of the cane, you know, coming down the hallway before she opened the door and came in. And there was one day where she was supposed to come in and there wasn't any clacking of the cane. And the reason was cause she didn't need to use her cane anymore. In other words, she was able to, you know, to get strong enough to where the cane was no longer necessary. And John, I've seen him tell the story before, and just the look of satisfaction on his face and saying what I'd said earlier, like I thought it was my biggest success was going to be someone gaining 20 pounds of muscle or losing 50 pounds of fat or whatever. But that was probably the most satisfaction that I've had is, you know, hearing her walk down the hallway without the clicking of the cane. And we've been fortunate as a company to have, this doesn't happen to everybody, but a fair amount of, I've heard about, you know, I don't know if I've heard directly about a dozen, but it's been, you know, at least a handful of clients who've been able to get rid of their canes. And that's, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a huge quality of life issue. So that's what comes to mind when you ask the question.
Yeah. Did you know when getting into fitness and particularly slow motion strength training that it would have such a positive effect on people's quality of lives and their overall health and not just simply their strength?
That's a good question. I'm kind of chuckling because this might not be the answer that you're expecting, but when I became a personal trainer, I did it really because I'm just so interested in exercise, and it was just like, hey, this is it. You know, I got my degree in engineering, and had just gotten, and it was doing exercise just as an avocation, not thinking of it as a potential vocation. It was just something that I loved to do, and so when I was at GE working as an engineer and thinking, well, this is not what's going to make me happiness and fulfillment for the rest of my life. What other ideas are there? And for whatever reason, at that point, it occurred to me that there are people that are personal trainers that get to, you know, work in the gym all day long and, you know, be around exercise, talking about exercise with people, you know, sort of, you know, living, eating, breathing exercise ideas and concepts and applications. So it was really just my interest, because it might not be the greatest story, but back then, and again, I was, you know, and also to give context, I think I was 23 when I made the switch into personal training. And for at least for males, my understanding is the prefrontal cortex doesn't fully develop until age 25. So this is without a fully developed prefrontal cortex. I wasn't getting into it thinking, hey, I'm gonna, you know, make a huge difference on a lot of people's quality of lives. It was just because, hey, I love this stuff and I want to. You know, I just want to be around it and actually, you know, get paid for it too. So,
yeah. Well, did you ever have that maybe not moment, or when did you realize that this was bigger than that, though, that, you know, we really were helping people in such a big way?
Yeah. And by the way, I'll answer that question in a second, but I will have to mention that in my mind, you know, building bigger muscles and losing fat is incredible too. Like, in other words, I'm not saying that, you know, like, you know, getting stronger or even walking is necessarily like, or intrinsically a superior goal to building, you know, 20 pounds of muscle. It's just, I mean, it depends on the person and what they want and all that kind of stuff, you know? So, and what's important to them. I would say probably when I was working at Ideal Exercise up in Seattle, like after I had the initial stint at 24 Hour and then was working for them for a year and a half, there was a number of people with MS that we worked with up there. And one woman in particular who needed to use a walker to walk. And even then she could barely walk, even with a walker. But she told us if it wasn't for the strength training she was doing with us, she wouldn't be able to walk at all. And so, yeah, it was probably then where it started to notice, some of those kinds of things more than I did before.
Yeah.
And maybe it was my prefrontal cortex finally, forming so far.
What about you personally? I mean, obviously you've gotten stronger. You have a significant amount of muscles. Like, you've got a fantastic physique, and one would think that being the...
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome. I mean, everyone talks about your biceps, Matt. They're like out of this world. But how has super slow motion strength training improved? Well, I guess in addition, your physical fitness, but also your overall health.
If I hadn't stumbled upon slow motion strength training back when I did, back in 1992, I don't know if I would have been able to continue strength training. Cause I mean, this was a serious issue in my left shoulder. And, with throwing the weights around and just the impact forces involved with that, I just don't know if I would have been able to find a good way of working around it. So, which is tough for me to wrap my mind around, like, what would I have done? And maybe I would have found a way around it. I'm not sure. But my first answer to the question is that it allowed me to strength train. Whereas the way that I was doing before, it just wasn't gonna keep working, because it was eating away bones in my body, which sounds crazy, but that was that's what was happening. And so that's number one, is being able to strength train at all. And number two, to actually get significantly better results from my strength training compared to what I'd been doing before. So for me, when you ask about kind of my fitness, getting more muscle, increasing my lean muscle tissue, and also, the metabolic rate to some degree because of more muscle tissue and helping to get leaner. Those would be a big deal. And also in my lower body, I spend most of my time when I tell my sort of origin story about my left shoulder, but my knees have been tricky ever since I was a child, and I was never really able to, I never really felt safe, pushing really hard with my legs, because my knees just were tricky, for lack of a better way of putting it. And with slow motion, high intensity strength training, I was able to do that story that I told a few minutes ago about, taking the squats to what we call muscle success, or like some people that are diehards and high intensity we call, deep muscular failure. And so it allowed me to train my legs much more effectively than I did before. So for me, I've been able to get more muscular than I otherwise was, and still actually able to strength train, and also become leaner. And so those are things which me personally, turn me on as far as in my pursuits of exercise. And then, although these weren't my primary goals, and probably still aren't my primary goals, I've been able to get pretty strong, and my what cardiovascular fitness is pretty good. I mean, I may not, be the same thing as an elite marathon runner, but it's pretty good as a result of strength training. Because a lot of people, don't realize that strength training, if you do it effectively, can actually have significant positive benefits in the cardiovascular system. That's for me. And then as far as, and the other piece too is, and I guess I alluded to this a little bit in very early in our conversation here, is the difference between a college kid and how much time there was available for doing whatever you want in hindsight versus 40 years old, got a 9-year-old son, a 6-year-old daughter, wife, trying to spend time and energy with them, and trying to work on growing our company and all that. And it's you know, I half jokingly, half serious talk about, you know, I run a company where we specialize in time efficient exercise, and I have trouble fitting in 20 minutes twice a week. And I do fit in 20 minutes twice a week, but it's, you know, but it's, I mean, honestly, it's not easy. So I understand where everybody's coming from, even someone like a fitness nut like myself. So there's that. And then I do dabble in some other sort of recreational activities, like, if somebody really presses for me, like I dabble in surfing and dabble in snowboarding, but really those are really dabbling. I think I snowboard maybe an average of two days a year if I'm lucky, and surfing. I mean, I hate to say it because I do enjoy surfing, but it's been months since I've been out in the water. But in other words, if those would be the sort of physical activities where people would say, well, where does it make a difference? It's like, well, being stronger and better conditioning definitely makes a difference in those activities for me. So, yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned your family a couple times. And I know your wife, Julie, she does a slow motion strength training. It's funny because I remember you saying one time that you don't train each other, right? Or you don't train her. Just right. That's off the table.
I want to stay married. I don't want her to hate me for all the pain that I'd be putting her through for, you know, putting her through an exercise routine.
Yeah. Tough. Does anybody else in your family do the perfect workout or do slow motion strength training? Have you been able to turn them to the dark side, so to speak?
Yeah. So certainly the one, and actually, you know, to some degree or other, you know, different members of my family, like immediate family and even extended family are either doing it or at least have played with it over the years. And I can't keep track of everyone in my extended family, but my mom is probably a good one to talk about in this conversation. Cause she is, she's 77 today, but tomorrow she's going to be 78. and her mother, actually died from complications due to osteoporosis. And so it sounds, what happened was, my grandmother, my mom's mom, you know, had osteoporosis and, you know, she started getting, as she got older, she started getting kyphosis in her spine, which is when you start to get hunched over. And the kyphosis got, you know, progressively worse and worse and worse and worse and worse the older that she got. And by the time that she was in her early to mid 80s, it was at least by the mid 80s, it was so much kyphosis that it was reducing the amount of oxygen she was able to get, because, you know, kind of like, you know, collapsing her chest cavity too much because of the bones just being too soft. I should also preface this because some other members of my family might listen to it. And this is my understanding of the way my mom has explained it to me. And so if I get any details wrong to any of my extended family members, I apologize. I'm just giving my best understanding of what happened here. And eventually it got to the point where she couldn't breathe effectively. And so that's, so at least the way that I interpreted the different things that surrounded her death, I think she died at age 86 or so. It was basically, I'm not sure if this is the immediate cause of death when she actually died, but it was certainly influenced by, or maybe even caused something to happen where she just wasn't able to breathe enough because of too much kyphosis from osteoporosis in her spine, just hunching over and over and over, which sounds hard to believe, but it was severe kyphosis. And so so my grandmother, she had one son but five daughters, including my mom. And so I've got four aunts on that side of the family, and then I've got my mom, and all five of them are, you know, very concerned. I'd say certainly some of them, if not all of them, petrified to end up the same way that their mother did. And so each one of them is, you know, kind of do different things that they can help with osteoporosis, and including my mom, and I know one of my aunts, at least over there, maybe more than one, did super slow for a while, might still be doing it. But my mom, yeah, she's been doing strength training and super slow, including at our Mission Valley studio here recently for, gosh, a number of years, actually. So yeah, so she's a good example of that.
That's awesome. And she's doing virtual training from what I know too.
Yeah. Cause I don't know when, you know, different people might be hearing this podcast or video cast, at different times, but yeah, we're here in, kind of in the sort of the middle of the COVID crisis of 2020 and so we're doing virtual training with a number of quite a few of our clients. And so my mom is doing that too. Yeah.
I think it's important to point out here too, that a lot of people who may be new to the method is how impactful slow motion strength training can be on increasing bone density or for anyone who has a concern about that. And is that, was that ever in the back of your mind when building this business, is knowing that you had a family history and like knowing, or were you just all in because this was great exercise?
Yeah. Well, the truth be told, I was all in because it gave me better results. It was safer in my joints. You know, it was all the benefits that we often talk about. I've certainly paid a lot more attention to the bone density impacts just because of a personal interest to not just with strength training, but anything else that, you know, I come across might also be helpful for my mom. It would have been on my mind to some degree this whole time. Like I said, with my mom's connection there, definitely more, I guess, would be the way that I'd answer that.
What do you want people to know about slow motion strength training?
Well, that's a good question. Slow motion strength training allows a person to get incredible fitness results. I mean, this is going to sound like a marketing commercial, and maybe it is, it's just the way that I think about it is it allows a person to get incredible fitness results without having to spend your life in the gym. Because, you know, we often, at least I named our company The Perfect Workout years, you know, over 20 years ago, with the idea that that people can get better results than just about anything else a person's going to do in the name of exercise. It's safer in the joints than just about anything else for exercise. And it's super time efficient, you know, 20 minutes twice a week to get essentially optimal results. Over the years, what I've found is that the thing which people usually get most interested in is the time efficiency, at least to try us out for the first time, is the time efficiency, you know, 20 minutes twice a week. The better results part, is almost like, I'm trying to think of the right way of putting it. People oftentimes are even skeptical that you can get any results from 20 minutes. So it's like, why am I even trying to argue that you can get better results than you know, most other things in just 20 minutes, right? You know, so that's probably, as I'm sitting here today, that I wouldn't emphasize that because you could, you know, get in, look at different studies and arguments and try to make, well, gosh, if you spend your life in the gym, might you get 4% better results? Maybe. A reasonable person could make a reasonable argument like that. But even the people that in exercise are on the volume side, you know, and I've heard some of them interviewed on this and have them be pushed, you know, from a high intensity perspective, saying, well, okay, if you're just doing one set per exercise, training to, you know, what we call muscle success, or other people in the exercise industry often call it muscle failure, how much of the results, you know, could you get? And these are proponents of volume. They'll say on the order of 80%. So in other words, long story short, is you're getting, even for people that think you should be spending your life in the gym, you know, the vast majority of the results that can be gotten from exercise in just minutes a week, you know, 20 minutes twice a week. And plus it's safer on your joints, has all these other great benefits that we talked about, and for osteoporosis and metabolic benefits and myokines, and there's probably a lot of stuff which aren't even aware of yet. And so, you know, increases in basal metabolic rate, which it helps with fat loss and discriminated fat loss, and you really can get great, you know, great fitness, health, and fitness results, and don't have to spend your life in the gym. Just a very small, you know, just less than an hour a week, and if you do it right, you know, exercise, you know, challenge yourself. I'm not saying the 20 minutes are easy. They're not, if you do it right. But then you'll get incredible results, and you won't have to spend the rest of your life in the gym.
Yeah. Mark Alexander said, you know, there's no magic pill, but this is pretty darn close to it.
Yeah. I guess it would be magic if it wasn't hard, you know, but it's a challenge.
Yeah.
And, having said that, I don't want to get anyone to get, scared away by that, or even scared away by my story about like that crazy thing that I did on this class, because what the methodology does is basically allows you to push yourself as hard as you're willing to push yourself. But it won't force you to push you any further than you're willing to push yourself. So there's no danger of, thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to do this. This sounds way too hard. I mean, it's challenging, especially if you want to, get good results, but you challenge yourself as much as you can, and then you won't be challenged anymore beyond that, because it's just, it's the right amount for you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Perfect Workout Podcast. We hope you found today's episode inspiring and actionable. If you're ready to take the next step in your fitness journey, visit us at theperfectworkout.com for more resources, or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone who could benefit. Together, let's make fitness simple, empowering, and a part of life well lived. See you next time.